Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Rajananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasri Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Prabhu Srimad Bhagavatam 4 chapter 29 verse 60 Narada Uvacha
Narada Uvacha
Avyavadanena
Avyavadanena
Lingena
Lingena
Manasa
Manasa
Swayam
Swayam
Narada Uvacha
Narada Uvacha
Denaivaravate Karma
Denaivaravate Karma
Denaivamutra Tatpuma
Denaivamutra Tatpuma
Bhunte Hya Avyavadanena
Bhunte Hya Avyavadanena
Lingena Manasa Swayam
Lingena Manasa Swayam
Narada Uvacha
Narada Uvacha
Tatkumar,
Deva, Tatkumar,
Mukhehi swayam
ringena manasa swayam narada vacha
avyavadanena without any change, by the subtle body, manasa, by the mind, swayam, personally. Translation of Great Sage Narada continues, the living entity acts in the gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer, and thus there is no change. Purpose: the living entity has two kinds of bodies, the subtle body and the gross body, and the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. The gross body is the instrumental outer covering. When the gross body is lost or when it dies, the root of the gross body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, continues and brings about another gross body. Although the gross bodies apparently change, the real root of the gross body, the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego, is always there. The subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus the subtle body continues, whereas the gross body is changed from one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the change of the gross body, but because he has no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he cannot clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but he works in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently they are bewildered as to how the actions of one gross body affect another gross body. The actions of the subtle body are also guided by the super soul, as explained by Bhagavad Gita. I am seated in everyone's heart, from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because the Supreme Personality of God or the super soul is always guiding the individual soul, so always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. In other words, the super soul reminds him to act in such a way. Therefore, although there is apparently a change in the gross body, there is a continuation between the lives of an individual soul. Translation of the Great Sage Narada continues, the living entity acts in the gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus, there is no change. So here Narada Muni begins to answer the question asked by the king, and that is, how is it possible that we get the reactions in other lifetimes because the body is completely changed? So how what's the connection between these two different bodies, and how does this, how do we get karmas? So the medium is here explained by Narada Muni, and what she talks about, the linga, or the subtle body,
and this does not change. It's not separated from the jiva. Even though the gross body gets separated from the jiva, the subtle body does not. And therefore, that subtle body is the instrument which carries these reactions from one body to the next. The jiva, of course, is constantly one body to the next. But the medium of carrying over his reactions is done through the subtle body. And of course, along with the reactions, we got the previous impressions of the previous lifetime. All these different things are held in the subtle body, including the mind, intelligence, and ego. So these experiences are held there. That is not to say, of course, that the jiva himself doesn't have experiences. Yes, he has experiences, and he can also hold something. But the instrument for storing all of the experiences from all the lifetimes in the past is through this material medium, that is the subtle body. This is the instrument that carries the karma of the jiva. So in this way there is a continuity between gross bodies. Otherwise there would not be, because in one body you're an animal, in another a human being, in one you're a human being in one country, the next life you're a human being in some other country. So there's technically no connection between the material bodies. The only connection we can say is the soul. But along with the soul, then we have this other body which is material called the linga sarira, or the subtle body, sukshma sarira. So this goes along with the jiva. And this, of course, was illustrated in the story of King Varanjana. When he left his body, then his senses and his sense objects and the mind and intelligence, they all left the city also. They were not destroyed. So we may ask the question, well, when we see the body die, then we see the senses are there, and we see the brain is there, and everything is there. It's all sitting there. How is it possible that the senses go with the living entity? So the answer is that the senses that we see here in the brain, they are not the mind and the real senses talked of in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam talks of the senses. They're invisible. And they have a gross representation in our material body, of course, but the actual sense is a subtle thing in the subtle body. So that means the subtle body has senses. These are the elements that are discussed among the 23 odd elements in the material universe. We've got the gross elements, we've got the senses, 10 senses, we've got the mind, intelligence, etc., mahatattva. All these are called elements. So these elemental things, the senses, are not the ones that we see here, hands and feet, etc. But they are subtle things in the subtle body. And these things go with the living entity birth after birth. So in this way, we have a subtle body with subtle senses, etc. So it operates more or less like the body we have, but on a subtle level. We have a gross body with gross senses, we have a subtle body with subtle senses. And we have a gross mind in terms of the brain which stores things. And we have a subtle body, a subtle mind in the subtle body. So it's not so difficult to understand. The only problem is we can't see it. Because we can't see it, we don't think about it, and we think it may not exist. But this body actually is more important than the gross body. Because it is the one that stores everything ultimately. We store things in our brain, of course, because the brain is finished when you die. So what happens to all those experiences? So they're actually stored in the subtle body. So that subtle body stays with the jiva as long as it's in the material world. You cannot separate that. So it's material, but it stays with the jiva. Whereas the gross body is material also, does not stay with the jiva. We keep giving up and accepting new bodies. we don't give up and accept new subtle bodies, even though they're also material. So that body is with the jiva all the time, accompanying from birth, life after life, birth after birth. So this is the one means of continuing the jiva's experiences from one life to the next, even in spite of the fact that the bodies are material bodies, gross material bodies are completely different. The subtle body acts in some way to create the continuity. So the experiences of one lifetime help to create the next body. So we know, for instance, that the Bhagavad Gita says, whatever you remember when you die, that you become in your next lifetime. So Bharata remembered a deer when he was dying, and then he became a deer. And Paranjana remembered his wife, and he became a woman in the next lifetime. So it helps even shape your gross body. So in other words, the subtle body of the mind actually is very powerful. And it actually determines gross forms. So therefore the lesson to be learned is that you have to be careful what you think about. Otherwise you become that. So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna says you have to control the mind. And control means we choose what to think of and what to concentrate on, not that our mind just goes everywhere and like that. We actually very carefully decide. Of course, some people decide one thing and they attain it. So in the material world, yes, we can concentrate the mind on different things, or we can study for an exam and pass the exam and do all these sorts of things with the mind. But, of course, how does that really contribute to determining our future in terms of next body? We can say, well, I'm concentrating on these things, so the next lifetime I continue in the same way, and it'll be easier, and I'll get more success this next lifetime because I've got some success in this lifetime. That is true in one sense, but there's another factor. So yes, what we concentrate on helps determine our future, but how we do that, how we achieve also is important. And this is where karma comes in. So you may think about something and want certain goals, but you may not necessarily achieve them in the next lifetime because your karmas may be the opposite and they may cancel the whole thing out. We want more and more money, but if in this lifetime you want more and more money and you use all sorts of wrong activities and sinful activities to get it, next lifetime you may want money, but you may not get money. Because your sinful activity will not allow it. Your karmas will not allow that to happen. So it's not only the thought process and that determines your body, even though we say if you think of when you die, you get. That's a little wishful thinking in some cases, because then you can say, when I'm going to die, and think of, you know, going to Vaikuntha and go there. But no, it doesn't always happen, because we have to take consideration our activities. And if we have karmas, then it may not happen. Of course, by the will of the Lord, yes. If you think of the Lord and He's merciful to you, yes, you go to the Supreme. If you think once of the Lord, even you can go to the Supreme Lord if He's very merciful. But if we have karmas still left at the end of our lifetime, then we have to deal with those in our next lifetime. So that also interferes with our aspirations and whatever. Therefore, it is the duty of the jiva in his lifetime to be careful how he acts, and at the same time control his mind so that he has a proper object of thought. Now, of course, in karma, what do we think of? We're concentrating on things in the material world in karma yoga. So Sutra concentrates on his Sutra activity, and the Vaishya concentrates on his Vaishya duties, and the Kshatriya concentrates on his Kshatriya duties. And they ingrain that into their mind. This is my duty, I have to act like this. That's their code of work. So they really concentrate to become a perfect Vaishya or a perfect Sutra or a perfect Kshatriya. And they get benefit from that. That's their punya by doing so. And a Brahmin concentrates on being a Brahmin. This, of course, is good in one sense, because it obviously those the conduct is got rules and regulations, so they have to control their senses, etc. So that's good for them. The bad aspect, of course, is that it limits them, and it creates a material identity for them in a certain guna. And so therefore, it's not ultimately the highest benefit. As far as the material world, yes. And it restricts your activities so that you don't commit sinful activity, all that. But as far as giving the highest benefit, no. So in itself, it is rather useless. It cannot exist independently. So along with that, then we have to do these other spiritual activities. So that happens, of course, consciously in jnana, where we understand we're not the material body, etc. And of course, there is perfection in bhakti, where we understand that we're the servant of the Supreme Lord. So the goal, if we're simply stuck in the varnashram system doing karma yoga, that goal is not enough. That's why I said it can't exist independently, it can't be successful that way. So, therefore, we also have to have our non-material goal. Therefore, we have to concentrate upon the Supreme Lord. That is the method of going to the Supreme Lord. That is the method of getting perfection. So that is why it is often emphasized in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, you must concentrate your mind on the Supreme Lord. Man mana bhava man bhakto. Concentrate your mind on me. Think of me at all times. Ananyaschanti antamam. Such statements are always made in order to give us a spiritual goal rather than a material goal. So this is, we can say, beyond karma yoga and varnashram completely. So this is the main goal of the jiva, to do this. And everything else is secondary to that. So this is the principle upon which Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are based. That our goal is spiritual, and spiritual energy is Supreme Lord. And of course, Supreme Lord, the perfect form or the highest form, is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. So therefore, we should always somehow remember the Supreme Lord in the form of Krishna. And in Bhagavatam, that is, the method is to hear and appreciate the leelas of Krishna. And through this process, then, we become more and more absorbed in the Lord. So the mind, therefore, and the subtle body gets absorbed in the Supreme Lord. So though the mind is material, we get spiritual effects. Just as with the senses, if we engage them in bhakti, we get spiritual effects, not material effects. As long as we start with faith. That means the jiva has favorability towards the Lord, positive attitude towards the Lord. And then we engage the mind and the senses, and we get spiritual effects. What is a spiritual effect? The jiva develops attraction to the Lord. So we utilize the mind and the senses to stimulate growth in the jiva, we can say, his tendency to become attracted to the Lord. So that is the method of bhakti. And everything else is secondary to that. Things may be favorable or whatever, we do those things also. But the main principle is these activities. This is the main principle. Everything else is secondary. That is the emphasis in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, Krishna says, you give up all these other activities and simply do bhakti. The concentration, using this mind in the subtle body, mind and intelligence, is there. We cannot really use this false ego in one sense, because it's responsible for our maya and basis of our ignorance. But that doesn't mean we give up ego either, because we do have another ego, another sense of I, and that is in the jiva itself. The nature of jiva is based upon its identity. That determines the nature of a jiva, that he has an individual identity separate from the Lord. He is not the Lord, he is separate from the Lord. So that individual identity, that ego is there, aham, is there in the jiva itself. So in the process of bhakti, yes, we get rid of ahankara, that false ego. We do not get rid of the other ego. We must exist as I am the servant of the Lord. We don't think I am the Lord, I am the servant of the Lord. So the sense of I is there in relation to the Supreme Lord. So that sense of ego is there, that remains. So we do have an identity, we don't give up our identity, and we use the material intelligence and material mind in such a way that they become spiritualized, they don't have material effects when they concentrate on the Lord. On the other hand, of course, if we use the mind in the wrong way, then of course it degrades us. Yeah? The mind is the enemy as well as the friend. We use it in the wrong way, it's not controlled, then we degrade ourselves. It becomes the enemy, material. If we use it in the proper way, it does not have to have any material effects at all. So we cannot condemn the mind then. We have to use it in the proper way. So therefore the subtle body, yes, it is responsible for binding us in the material world, and we must give up the subtle body too. Get out of the material world. But at the same time, as long as we're in the material world, we can also utilize the subtle body. We can utilize the mind and intelligence, etc. And the subtle senses or whatever. We can utilize all these things. It's not a problem. We just simply have to direct them to service of the Lord. Then they don't give a problem to us at all. And rather, they encourage and help us increase bhakti in the jiva itself.
Maharaj, what do we understand by objects or senses? Because they also travel with these subtle bodies?
Tanmatras. It's mentioned like that in one commentary, I think, in the East Upanishad, Valadeva. He includes tanmatras also along with that. They go along with it. Probably in a very subtle aspect, because obviously the tanmatras are associated with the senses, so we cannot separate them. If they don't have tanmatras, they don't operate. So they must have some object. The senses must have something to respond to. So we can say the potential is there and carried with the jiva. But obviously, we pick up objects, and through that we experience the tanmatras in the material world. So I suppose the potential of that is there in the carried in the subtle body also.
Can we say this besides inventing new languages and other things? Because in the previous lifetime, they're also kind of tanmatras. They experience the thing that they're developing in this lifetime. Some inventors and the scientists, they're able to do some follow-up.
Yeah, due to previous experiences or whatever. They can. Some people, when they're small children, they develop these abilities without practicing or what, or in mathematics or music or whatever. So how is it possible? They can just do things, that nobody else can do. And they don't have to learn it. So obviously they've perfected that so much and concentrated on it so much in the last lifetime. It served them this lifetime. They don't have to practice again. It's already programmed in there. It's just like in a computer, if you have a program there, you don't have to make things in your computer, you stick it in and it's there and it works. So there they already have some program that manifests in their mind and their brain and whatever, and helps them do things in this lifetime without having to think about it. It comes automatically to them.
Sometimes you find that other individuals try to compete with that person.
Difficult because they have to learn everything. And so maybe next lifetime they can do that. If they practice enough in this lifetime, they get it next lifetime.
How do aparadh operate? Because we do bad activities and they get stored in the subtle body, and good activities get stored. How do aparadh? They are also a type of karma, or it is?
It's not really explained in that way. It's like a karma in one sense, because there's a karmic effects also, because any offense also is like, it's a bad karma. But it's particularly bad because it affects the bhakti in the jiva. Bhakti is stored in the jiva, not in the subtle body. So in that sense, karma is stored in the subtle body, not in the jiva. Now, bhakti is in the jiva itself. So if you do aparadh, the bhakti decreases. So So that's something that happens in the jiva, not in the subtle body. So the effect of the aparad is directly on the jiva himself. We may, of course, get karmic effects for aparads also, in terms of, you know, things, mm-hmm. reactions and whatever, just sort of in the subtle body. But the serious effect is the decrease of bhakti, which is within the jiva himself. That's what makes it different from karma. So doing papa and punyas, it doesn't really affect the jiva as such. It's simply increasing and decreasing your pious and impious credits in the subtle body.
The karma is carried in the subtle body. Sattva dosa is carried in the next life.
Well, yeah. Whatever bhakti you have, and if you decrease your bhakti, that is in the soul. So that's going to go with you also, obviously. That decrease will obviously. Yeah, the effects will be there and remain with you. Yeah, bhakti takes bhakti is held in the jiva.
When he committed suicide, he used to usually make him sleep by chanting, singing stories of Bhagavan Ram, and he used to lay there sleep. Then when he did suicide, then later on also he used to come as a subtle body and he used to make him...
Well, the jiva is there also though. He's got a jiva in the subtle body. It's not just a subtle body, so the jiva is inside there. So the jiva has the devotion and he's in the subtle body and doing that, singing in the subtle body, Gandharva body, whatever it was.
We can say that this subtle body is also eternal in one sense. Although the gross
almost eternal until you get liberation, then it dissolves.
That's separation. The reason that the subtle body is very difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult to give it up.
How jiva can be living a gross body and being like a liberated soul? How jiva can become liberated soul by being this?
Simply by complete detachment from it. The body is still, obviously, they all die, all bodies die, but he is not not affected by the distresses or the joys of the material body and everything like that. He's only absorbed in the Supreme Lord, his pastimes of the Supreme Lord.
Give you an example of the dry coconut.
What, the dry one is what?
Yeah, subtle body, gross body, and
together.
I'm going to go to the next one.